WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Harry Whittington has been called the king of the paperback pioneers. In the 1950s, when the big innovation in publishing was the cheap paperback, Whittington churned them out in every genre, including crime stories, westerns, and romances. Whittington is still at it, but it's more than volume that makes Whittington special. His crime novels have been rediscovered by French literary critics, who rank him as one of the top second-generation crime novelists. And in the United States, four of his crime novels have been published in new editions by Black Lizard Press, including Forgive Me, Killer and A Moment to Pray. They're both bleak novels about loners with accounts to settle. I asked Harry Whittington about when he started writing fiction.
I came along at the end of the pulps, and about 1948, when they were dying out, a company called Fawcett, Gold Medal, began to publish original paperbacks, and they published them at 25 cents a copy. They published 250,000 copies of each one. That was just the perfect market for me, because I needed the money, and I wrote fast, and they paid fast.
Now, you've written that you agree with Mickey Spillane, who once said that the first page sells the book being read, and the last page sells the book that you're writing.
Yes.
What do you think about when you're writing a first page?
Well, usually I try to bring a character on doing something. I want him to walk on stage, to enter stage right with something driving him. Something behind him, something in his past, something that's bothering him, something that he's got to settle.
I think we've got a really good illustration of that. Could you read the first couple of paragraphs of your crime novel, Forgive Me, Killer, which was republished about a year ago?
All right. That Sunday afternoon, when I finally got up to the state penitentiary to see this walker, the prison band was in the middle of a concert. I was tired after the long bus trip and stopped a moment, listening, leaning against the door jamb at the auditorium exit. The music didn't make me feel better or help me understand why I'd given up my Sunday and traveled these 200 miles. People inside were enjoying themselves, though, and I walked on through the corridor, showed the guard my visitor's pass, and told him why I was there. He led me into this crib. It was completely bare except for two chairs, a varnished table, and an electric fan. I saw the fan was bugged, but it didn't interest me. I went in, and he locked the door behind me. I lit a cigarette and sat on the table edge. The door across the room opened, and this prisoner came in. He looked like a scarecrow in prison fatigues. We stood there and looked at each other. At first, I thought there was some mistake. This guy didn't even look like Walker. "You were a Walker?" He smiled and nodded, but his smile had tears behind it. Yes, sir, I've lost some weight." "You sure to God have. What's the matter? Don't they treat you right here?"
You've really illustrated in those couple of paragraphs what you set out to do, starting something in the middle of the action.
Yes, that's right.
Somebody who's already driven by something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why does that work?
Well, I think the best reason it works is because if you grab a reader's attention and you make him care, then you can do anything. You can quote the Bible if you want to. Once you've got him, you've got him.
You were doing very well with paperbacks for a while, writing in all the different genres and selling very well.
Yeah.
But your fortune really changed for a few years.
Yes. I don't know what happened. I know that I left my original agent, and I went through a bad time. I had trouble selling stories there for a while. But as a matter of fact, during that time, I was writing those books one a month. And I was also writing books or stories as Robert Hart Davis for them. Remember The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
Sure
the TV?
Do.
Well, that was, they put out a magazine, and each month the main story in it was by Robert Hart Davis. And I was Robert Hart Davis for about 10 or 20 of those.
And after that bad time, I think you gave up writing novels
yes,
for a while.
Yes, I did. I gave it up from 1968 to 1975. Now, I was an editor at Rural Electrification Administration.
Was that depressing for you?
No, it wasn't. I got a job when I got there that no one in the government has ever had since or before. They were having trouble at these meetings they were having all over the country. They were so dull. The government speakers would come in and they would put people to sleep. And people weren't arriving early for the show, for the meetings. And so they decided that they would put on a play, an act each day of the 3 days to get people there early. So they had me write and direct it, and it made such a hit that for the next 7 years, that's about all I did. It just happened, and nobody else has ever had such a job since or before, but that's what I did.
With the amount of writing that you've done, you've probably spent most of your days sitting over a typewriter.
Yeah.
But you seem to have such a deep understanding of longing, of despair, of a need that will probably always go unfilled. You also understand a lot about violence in your novels. And to illustrate this point, I'm going to ask you to read a passage on page 7 from A Moment to Pray. Oh, I should explain here that our main character has just witnessed a woman take a pole and strike another man across the face with it.
She laid his face open for a full second. He went on laughing and yelling and pawing for her. Blood spurted from his face and temple and all over the front of the counter. He caught at his face with one hand, and the blood surged between his fingers and ran down the back all over his expensive jacket. He began to rock back and forth on his knees when the pain finally hit him. He cried out just once. I had heard that kind of cry once long ago aboard a carrier. A bomb struck and the ship flew out in atoms and splinters and pieces of hell, and the ones that were killed died quietly, and the ones that were badly wounded blacked out. But the ones who were mutilated cried out from their guts because they weren't hurt badly enough to die and they were too ripped up to live. That's the way they cried out just once before they crumpled with their arms over their heads as Bullock did now.
When you're writing a scene like the one you just read, are you drawing mostly on your imagination, or are you drawing on memories of things you've actually witnessed?
Well, I'm drawing, I would say, on imagination. I try to take something. I think all of us write from what we are, what we know, what we believe, who we are. I believe that. But I think then we take that and put it in our minds and turn it over and over and try to get the very most out of it.
I have to ask you how you've come up with so many stories during your writing career.
Well, I'll tell you, introduction to my book, I said that it took me 13 years to learn to plot. And then when I learned, it was just like scales just fell from my eyes. I could plot upside down, backwards, forward, and any way at all. I just knew. I learned like a lot of writers never know.
Are you still writing now?
Yes, I am.
What kinds of stories are you writing?
I'm writing the, Mandingo?
Right, that's a plantation novel,
well,
a
that's
slave
right.
novel?
Yes. Well,
that was made into a movie?
That's right.
Was Phil Mandingo based on that?
They made it into a movie, and the reviewers said that, they used to say that, of that book, that if they wanted to say a book was bad, they would say it was as bad as Mandingo. And yet Mandingo has never been out of print, not one day since 1956. And this man, Kyle Anstott, died, and the publishers wanted to continue his books, so they hired me to do the Falconhurst books. So that's what I've been doing since 1975.
Does it pay well to do
yes,
that?
Yes, it pays. It pays, actually, it pays better than the suspense books used to pay. I think suspense is paying more now. But in my day, suspense was got a printing or two, and that was it.
Now, look, you're a very good writer. Do you feel like you're wasting your talents writing Mandingo novels?
No, I don't feel I'm wasting my talents writing anything. I tell you why. Because I have had to do the very best I could do on everything I wrote. Everything I wrote, I had to do the best I could do because there wasn't any other way I could sell it. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any friends among publishers or anything like that. I just had to do the best I could.
Well, I wish you the best, and I thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Harry Whittington spoke to us from station WUSF in Tampa, Florida. Four of his crime novels have been reissued by Black Lizard Books. This is Fresh Air.